ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Text 26 from Canto 3, Chapter 13. This is Maitreya narrating to Vidura the appearance of Lord Varaha. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Purport. The form of the Lord, any shape, is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. The Lord is the destroyer of all material contamination because his form is personified Vedic knowledge. All the Vedas worship the transcendental form of the Lord in the Vedic mantras. The devotees request the Lord to remove the glaring effulgence because it covers his real face. That is the version of Ishopanishad. The Lord has no material form, but his form is always understood in terms of the Vedas. The Vedas are said to be the breath of the Lord, and that breath was inhaled by Brahma. Wow. The original student of the Vedas. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Boar, and therefore the Boar incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. The glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. Whenever there is glorification of the Lord, it is to be understood that the Vedic mantras are being rightly vibrated. The Lord was therefore pleased when such Vedic mantras were chanted, and to encourage his pure devotees, he roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. Previously we heard about the tumultuous roar and the comparison was made to the roar of a mountain. Didn't comment so much about that, but from time to time Prabhupada would comment about that. That is, mountains, some mountains are with living entities within them. Of course, their living entities can leave a body and leave behind a skeleton or the remains of the body that there's no living entity within. But the Vedic picture of mountains is they are also persons, like Govardhan and other mountains. The Parvati, the daughter of Mount Parvat, and so on. There's living entities within. Now, to modern scientists, or even just like a high school kid, that has faith in modern science, so it's like, come on. Krishna showed his form of Hari, that to indicate that Govardhan is also a person. When they were making offerings to Govardhan Hill, it wasn't just child play. The gigantic form of Lord Hari appeared and ate all their offerings. How do we understand these things? It defies our worldly sensibilities for sure. But we understand, the method of understanding is by acceptance the authority of the Vedas. And by acceptance of the authority of the Vedas, because the source of the Vedas is a perfect person, we accept that the Vedic teaching is perfect because the source is a perfect person. Prabhupada gives this very simple example. A child, what does a child know about anything? He asks his father, Daddy, what is this? And Daddy says, this is a watch. So then the child says, this is a watch. Now, what does he understand about watches? That's another thing. But his speaking is correct on the authority of his father, who says, this is a watch, or whatever the other things are that a child is learning from his father or mother. Similarly, how do we know anything? That's if you're an existentialist, there's a Western philosophy, existentialism, that says you really can't know anything. Or Camus, one of the French gentlemen who propounded existentialism. You can know that you exist because you think, and that's about all that you can know. You exist. I think, therefore I am. That's a French phrase. And beyond that, you know, and think is just your thought, and that's all it is. It's not reality, it's just your thought. And the world is similarly. You can't really know anything other than that you exist because you think. Anyway, so there's different philosophies about what's what. So the naturally, the Vedas has a system of knowing things called pramana, the evidence or the means of knowing something. And direct sense perception, reason and logic, and shabda pramana, the sound vibration. So, you know, like a weather report. You want to know if it's going to rain, or is there really a tornado coming or something. So you ask the authority, and the shabda pramana from that authority says, the weather report is whatever the weather report is. The point here is we function, practically speaking, every day based upon shabda pramana. Just take, you know, how do we know there is a person named President Donald Trump? Has anyone seen him? Maybe, you know, maybe, so many maybes. The moon landing, maybe it was a hoax. Maybe. So how do you know? The direct sense perception, you take on the authority. But it depends on your accepting the authority of the media and these images, so many of them, this is what Donald Trump looks like. and this is anyway, so whatever is out there in the world, some authority, some by direct sense perception, or by reason and logic, or by sound. So then there's fallible sound and there's infallible sound and infallible sound. So it's the Vedic arrangement, the system of knowing things, is aparusheya shabda. Aparusheya shabda means from the infallible entity. Purusha in this case means the fallible human, and aparusheya is the infallible entity. That's the source of the Vedic knowledge. We accept things in the Vedas on the authority of the Vedas. Really common, two common examples. On the authority of the Vedas, the stool of an animal is contaminated. After touching, you have to immediately take a bath because your body is contaminated. But the stool of a cow is not contaminated. So hot, you know, that's a contradiction. We accept the authority of the Vedas. And then sure enough, some scientists have studied there's antiseptic properties of the stool, cow dung. And then another is the bone of an animal and then conch shell. One is contaminated. We put conch shells on the altar and it's not contaminated on the authority of the Vedas, although it appears to be contradictory. How do we know? You can do your scientific investigation to see, but whether you're able to do that or not able to do that, from the Vedas, it's resting upon accepting authority of the Vedas. Prabhupada expressed many times, when I met with Professor Katovsky, he said, you and I are the same. You accept some authority, I accept some authority. You accept Lenin, I accept Krishna. But you have to accept some authority. Otherwise, how can you know something? Sense, reason, and sound. So you accept the recorded message of Lenin. I accept the message of Krishna. So what's the difference? Now that we can talk about which is the better authority to accept, Lenin or Krishna. But it's a principle. So how do we understand the roaring of a mountain? Or so here another, in this verse, like an elephant, it's metaphor. Now, has anyone seen an elephant plunge into the ocean? Elephants may be seen to go into a lake or a river, but it's a metaphor, meaning his form was gigantic. This Lord Varaha wasn't small, really big. And he's going to have to lift the earth planet. Of course, Krishna, when he was just a small boy, he lifted Govardhan Hill, so he doesn't have to be big, he can be small. But he's picking up the earth on his tusks, and so he assumes that this gigantic form, even an elephant, as big as an elephant is, can an elephant pick up the earth? So there's supernatural power, but at the same time, our acharyas appreciate this Varaha form was appropriate for the circumstance. As we heard, he didn't need to use his senses, but it was appropriate. From the mire or filthy place, the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean somehow is considered like that. So, form of a boar. And he lifted the earth planet with his tusks. The emphasis in the purport here is the knowers of the upper planetary systems, they knew the Vedic hymns and they knew the person who was the object of the Vedic hymns. And so he appeared and roared in response. So they understood the roar, and then they chanted the hymns, and then he roared in response. Just like affirmation. And they were happy because he was going to rescue the earth, and he proceeded to plunge into the ocean to rescue the earth. It's a pastime. Now there are persons who recite hymns from the Vedas that do not know what is the purpose of the hymns of the Vedas. Say it again. There are persons who chant the Vedic hymns that do not know what the purpose of the Vedic hymns is, the bhokta of the sacrifice. There's different categories of persons that don't know. They think they know, but they don't know. And they don't know that they don't know. And they don't really want to know because they have an idea and they're contented with their idea. But the personalities, they knew. And the Lord was reciprocating with them because that was their intention. There's this nice description in the Gajendra Moksha pastime where Gajendra realized he's finished. And so from his previous life, Supersoul reminded him of the prayers or stotras that he had recited when he was a king, and he began reciting them. He does not mention Vishnu's name. So he could have meant, like some persons who are chanting Vedic mantras, he could have meant other things besides Lord Vishnu. But the commentary says, because Vishnu understood, he appeared. He's intending to appeal to me. And Brahma and Shiva didn't appear because that wasn't his intention. But Atri Muni, when he was reciting the Vedic prayers, all three appeared. And they became partial, their partial incarnations became his son. The intention is important. From Rupa Goswami's teaching about bhakti, it's the essence of bhakti. It is the essence of bhakti. So we really need to know. What is the source of everything? And therefore, there are different ideologies. We discussed it yesterday, just elaborating again. Before Vyas came, did the Vedas exist? Yes. He had a service of dividing them, and in a sense, he made his commentary on them, summarizing them in Vedanta Sutra, explaining the Vedas in sutra form. And prior to him, these other personalities had access to the Vedas, and they made their explanation. This is what the Vedas are teaching. This is the highest truth. This is the highest truth. And their ideologies are illuminating or elucidating what they think is the highest truth, and lining up all the interpreting the Vedic statements according to line up with that teaching. Following Vyasadeva, the lines of disciplic succession that are spoken of in the Padma Purana, the four lines of disciplic succession, their authenticity and their diversity is found in their commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That's, they're followers of Vyas. They're not followers of the atheistic doctrines. And there's diversity amongst the followers of Vyasadeva's doctrine. And there's similarity amongst them. Now, sometimes there's like contention between this group and that group. Groupism. Sometimes. And sometimes there's appreciation. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a real strong attempt to emphasize the oneness, or the not the absolute oneness, but the essence of the four sampradayas have some similarity. They're all worshipping Vishnu. They're Vaishnava doctrines. He is the source of everything. That's Vyasadeva's conclusion. Some of you may have visited in Mayapur. The headquarters of Bhaktisiddhanta is Chaitanya Gaudiya Math. It's on the Bhaktisiddhanta Road. When I went there, 1973 or 1974. The main altar, Gandharvika Giridhari, is the name of the Radha Krishna deity, and around the four corners of the rather modest small temple, there were murtis Bhaktisiddhanta had established of the four Sampradaya Acharyas, because it was a pillar of his Gaudiya Math teaching, unity in diversity. There's diversity. And here's the differences, and here's the unity. He wanted to bring unity amongst that diversity. Acknowledging diversity is wonderful. There's a book that he wrote, I think it was in Bengali and then translated into English, of detailing, like Bhaktisiddhanta only can do, detailing the line of disciplic succession, going back to Narayana, etc., and for each one of the four, over this expanse of time, the essence of their teaching, and the different teaching, with a very elaborate, very thorough, very comprehensive, and then of course his purpose of that was not ours is better than yours. It's just identifying what they're standing like a column to support his intention, which is there's an essence. They all accept Vishnu. They're Vaishnava teachings coming into simple succession, starting with this Padma Purana verse. Authentic disciplic successions. Diversity amongst them, which is just fine. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the things that he wrote is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was establishing his essential teachings, he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, took two teachings from each of the four sampradayas, 2 times 4 is 8, and he makes a list of these 8 teachings that are within Mahaprabhu's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva teaching. And he, Lord Chaitanya, was seeing the unity amongst the diversity. Now that was Bhaktisiddhanta's time. And just a little sharing, in our current time, the director of the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, in Bombay, his name is Madhavananda. And Madhavananda, besides being an exalted person to be a director of a hospital is no light task. He is respected in India. So he, along with people that work with him, made an arrangement that whereby every year, once a year, going out over a period of years, the plan was that the four Sampradaya leaders would come together and do something together. And one of those years was the importance of the holy name, because all the Sampradayas agreed. And then on the, whatever it was, anniversary of Ramanujacharya's appearance, everyone would come together and honor Ramanujacharya together from the four Sampradayas and Lord Chaitanya. So he was like the respected coordinator of all of that. And, you know, statements and photographs of the different heads of those Sampradayas today, you know, are into it and invited their followers to participate. So I don't know exactly what the news report was about how that went, but I know that was at least at some point in time following the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta, which was following the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So now back to this Bhagavatam verse. The personality of Godhead knew that these exalted souls knew that he is the object of the Vedic hymns. For us, it's not a problem. Bhoktaram yagatapasam. He's the bhokta of the yagya. For us, it's really clear. And for some people, it's not clear. Even they chant the Vedic hymns. Just a little short stop. Some number of years ago, I was in Tennessee, and I was invited to speak at the Hindu temple in Nashville. I didn't want to go. But, you know, I was, we're trying to reach out to these people, and so I went. And at the beginning of my visit, there was a follower of Madhvacharya who was performing a yagya. And I had never been part of a yagya at a Hindu temple. And so I expected he's a grihastha from the Madhva line in Udupi. So, you know, he's got it straight. But he didn't. So he started doing the mantras, and the first mantra was invoking the bhokta of the yagya. And it was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I thought, wow, this is fantastic. And then he started doing all the other mantras, the Ganesh mantra and the whichever the deva was, and I just walked out. I got like disturbed. Like, how could this? He knows the difference. He knows better. He's been trained. How can he do this? So afterwards I asked him, you know, privately. And he said, well, I'm grihastha, I have to maintain my family. I said, where's your maintenance coming from? Are you aware that the funds for this temple came from a cattle rancher? And you're doing karmakanda mantra rituals so you can maintain your family? Think about it. Even someone who knows better can do wrongly for, advantageous reasons. What to speak of people that don't know better? So We're not indignant and condescending and all of those things about people that don't have proper understanding. Our wish and our effort is to propagate the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita so that people can know. It's very clear in Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear in the Bhagavatam who is the source of everything. And the position of worshipping others than the source of everything. It's avidhi purvakam. It's done without proper understanding. Avid, without knowledge. So this, the personality of Godhead, Lord Varaha, his body is fully transcendental, his body, as it's saying here, is the embodiment of all knowledge. And we don't have any uncertainty about it under the authority of the Vedas. Shukadeva Goswami is not interested in a fairy tale or something fanciful, imaginary, and allegorical. He's not interested. Why would he be interested? So why is he narrating this to Maharishi Parikshit? Why is Maitreya narrating this to Vidura? Why is it in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva has compiled? So, we give weight to the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost evidence or pramana. Amala pramana, beyond the modes of nature, perfected source of authority. And that gives us happiness to hear Varaha's pastimes. We'll continue tomorrow. Any discussion? Actually, we won't continue tomorrow. We'll be here. Any discussion? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, one comment and one question.
Okay.
Comments, the one that you explained about the four sampradayas, murtis being in the temple. I had visited the Mayapur last year, and when I saw that, I was unclear why they were there. So that explanation really helped to understand now.
Yeah.
So that's the one comment. And the question is, just how you initially said that, you know, a lot of these things are inconceivable. But we need to have faith in the Vedas and the authority. So for me, that faith sometimes gets shaken or it goes up and down. Especially, you know, when you hear these mountains roaring, examples like that. So how to, you know, stay fixed in keeping your faith?
Well, a comment on your comment and then response to your question. During Bhaktisiddhanta's time, when I went there in 1973 or 4, whatever it was, the temple at Murti, and they did some renovation and made it, you know, the temple big, a little bit bigger, and the murtis significantly bigger, because before they were quite small. Now they're more prominent. But the principle is unchanged. So, faith shaken. Here's a few things. In Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, one of them is Bhagavat Sandarbha, and he makes reference to Vishnu Purana, where Parashara Muni states, Bhagavan has six opulences in full. lists them. And then Jiva Goswami says, there's no question of understanding Bhagavan or God without accepting that he has innumerable and inconceivable potencies. And conversely, as soon as one does accept, then anything is possible because he has innumerable and inconceivable potencies. So now go back. Supposing he didn't. Supposing Bhagavan didn't have innumerable and inconceivable potencies, then there's something that he's not. But there isn't something that he's not. He's everything, and so there must be. It's just, that's logic, applying logic to something that may, to our worldly sensibilities, seem like a challenge to our faith. But so, something that can help nourish faith is just consider. That which is the source of everything possesses innumerable and inconceivable potencies. To say otherwise is what the impersonalist says, no potency. There's no such thing as potency. It's neutering God. He has no potency. Because there's only one thing, Brahman. But if there's not just only one thing, Brahman, what is it that's unlimited, that's the source of everything? It has to have unlimited and inconceivable. Because if the mind can conceive it, then it's within the boundaries of the mind. Must be. Logic. I mean, it doesn't prove anything. It's just, it's logical. And now, resting upon, supported by that logic, something that's quite inconceivable, if it's coming from this authoritative source that's not fallible, I may not be able to understand it. My mind can't necessarily get around it, using that contemporary phrase, get my mind wrapped around this idea. It's because it's beyond the mind. Is there something that's beyond our little minds? I hope so. Because if our mind can get around it, then it's something material. But there's something that's beyond what our little mind can get around, that's inconceivable. So it's quite okay that there's something that's inconceivable. That's the nature of God. That's the nature of the infallible source of everything. The material, and this is another approach of helping when there's something that's challenging my faith. What's the nature of material existence? The nature of material existence is turning attention away from the source of everything, and when you turn your attention away from light, there's darkness. And in that place of darkness, there's senses trying to be the enjoyer of the objects of the senses. That's the fundamental essence of material existence, sense enjoyment. Indriyas given to enjoy the object of the senses and the living entities inside, the body that has senses trying to be the enjoyer of the senses. That's our material condition. Whatever the species, whatever the guna and karma, whatever the upper, lower, middle planetary systems, it's sense enjoyment. That's the program. So, because of that, the original consciousness is covered. And therefore, I don't know who I am. I don't know lots of things because that condition of Maya is there. Now, what's the alternative? The spiritual alternative is bhakti adhoksaja. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhakti adhoksaja. Paradharma is bhakti adhoksaja. Adhoksaja means he who is beyond the senses, or that which is beyond the senses. So the material circumstance is trying to be the enjoyer of the senses, and the spiritual circumstance is using your senses to serve one who's beyond the senses. How do you do that? Because he's beyond your senses. It's on the authority of what is beyond your senses, that which is inconceivable. Because beyond the senses and beyond the mind is the source of everything. Say it negatively. The source of everything can't be within the purview of my mind and senses. Positively, the source of is there a source of everything? That which is the source of everything is beyond my mind and senses, just in principle. So it's good that you feel your faith is challenged. That's good. Because you're using the wrong instruments, the senses and the mind. And the senses that are prone or addicted to, lifetime after lifetime, being enjoyer of the temporary sense objects. And release from that condition is not just the negation of that, but the healthy condition of using the senses, connecting with sense objects for the service of Adhoksaja or Rishikesh. It takes the best method is not just like take that challenge to my faith and tuck it under the rug because it's embarrassing. Nor is it the right thing to do to obsess about it. Because then it starts getting bigger than life. Bigger than reality. But, you know, stay with it. And in the process of hearing, then guided by spiritual intelligence, take a look at that challenge to faith. And what does it look like? Through the process of hearing from authoritative source. Then the darkness starts to go. The tendency to try to be the enjoyer of the temporary starts to go. Clarity starts to come. Then it's not a blind faith. It's a, gee, this makes sense. You know, faith supported by reason. It's still not proof. It's just faith supported by reason. And then as that continues to go further, then the light gets brighter and brighter, then one can realize who Krishna really is. But, you know, before that stage, there's the stage of faith. It's resting upon hearing with a willingness, I want to understand this. And my faith is, I'm feeling a pinch of my a challenge to my faith over here. So now let me continue staying with that challenge to my faith and engage in the hearing process, thoughtfully trying to engage my senses in the service to the master of the senses. And experience what happens. Observe what happens. Something happens. It's the quality of one's hearing from the proper source. And then, of course, applying that which one has heard. That which you can understand, you apply that which you can understand. That's bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that bhakti is nothing but stages of faith. And there's a preliminary faith that's soft and pliable. And the preliminary faith says, there's a higher reality. I don't know what it is, but I have this certainty that there's a higher reality. That's the preliminary faith. And then the hearing process and the serving process and so forth. And then faith grows and grows and grows. That's the principle of faith. So continue hearing from the right source. Continue applying that which you can understand. Don't tuck the challenge your faith under the rug and look the other way. Your mind what? Your mind is boggling. Yes. Within the universe, yeah. So you got it. So why you're boggling? When who descends? Ganges descends. Okay. The Karna Ocean. That's what it is. The Karna Ocean. Yeah. You thought what? So, what's the problem? But why the Ganges can't be in the Karna Ocean and in Vaikuntha? What's the problem? The Brahma Jyoti. And then in the Brahma Jyoti, Vaikuntha planets. Okay? You got the picture. It's big. We're small. Anything else? Prabhupada ki jai.